Explore the night skies with our large range of high-quality telescopes. Whether you're a novice or an astronomy expert, we have the right telescope for you in our Australian Geographic e-store. Explore the whole range and find the right telescope for you today. Go to australiangeographic.com.au/shop. That's australiangeographic.com.au/shop. Hi, I'm Liz Guinness, and this is Talking Australia, a podcast by Australian Geographic. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Costa Georgiadis. Costa is a highly successful landscape architect, but most Australians know him for his work on TV, his passion for gardening, and his incredibly impressive beard. He's also dedicated to connecting people, both young and old, to their back gardens and beyond. So join me today and be inspired by this fascinating eco-visionary on this episode of Talking Australia. I was having a think about you coming in today to talk to us last night, and I was thinking, how would I best introduce you? And I realised, I was thinking, who else in Australia could I introduce just using one name? And I came up with Kylie Minogue, Kylie, and Costa. And I thought, oh, geez, interesting.
You're putting me on the on the soaring heights of.
It was just really interesting to me that I feel like the work that you've been doing over the last 20 years, on TV, has really kind of placed you firmly in the minds of Australians and what's going on in Australia at the moment.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. Yeah, look, from that sort of TV journey sort of incubated. Probably about 13, 14 years ago, sort of around 07 sort of thing. And, it's just gone.
It's gone nuts.
From there.
Yeah.
And it's really, I mean, it's a privilege to do what I do. I really love it. And I see the opportunities that it brings to put all those groups, all those perspectives that I've not only learnt through life, but that I'm getting a better grip on with time in the world, a chance to show them off and say to people, oh, look at this, or meet these people and say, you're like, check out this and have a look at that and give this a go, and there's this group doing that. And so it's really a big, I see it as a big switchboard, and
plugging
my role is this crazy switchboard operator that gets to see all this stuff, but then cross it. And I like the analog switchboard because it means a physical connection, like a cable.
Yeah.
You know, I like the cable when it's in the cloud, you know, that can break down. Whereas when there's a positive link, I like that face-to-face link. I like that real connection. And it doesn't matter to me whether it's a small cottage group in East Gippsland or an Indigenous community up in the back blocks of Weipa or Bumaga or Tiwi Islands or whatever. People are out there. They're doing incredible things. And I think the media as a vehicle moving forward, needs to be really strong, take responsibility, and not be bastardized or commandeered by lightweight spoilers that just want to jam the spokes. We have an opportunity and an obligation and a duty. And when I say media, I'm not talking about just because I'm in media.
Yep.
Like that's my privilege, but it's also my big responsibility. But it's our individual roles, because each and every one of us are a walking, talking, barking media broadcaster by what we put out there to a digital world that didn't exist, you know, on this scale barely 10 years ago. I mean, it's really amplified in the last 10 years, and all of the good things about it are what we want to amplify, but then there's equal amplification as a backwash that we have to be really careful with, because there is the negativity, there is the bubble making that we can be just speaking to a very small circle that's perfectly crafted by algorithms and things, so that you feel like, oh, well, I'm getting out there. But we have to remember to push through those walls and not be constrained to just talking to one demographic. It was never the case. And I suppose I tie that back to the fact that growing up in a Greek heritage, with a Greek heritage, the family was the whole family. It wasn't the nucleus. It was your yam papu. It was the great aunts. Yeah. It was everyone, you know, gets together. And as much and all as you'd laugh about it on a film like, you know, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, they say, sure, oh, we'll get the family over. You know, there's 50 people. But that's how community should be. You know, the street, the house, the family. Like, community I define in many different ways. We are players in multiple communities. So yeah, that's kind of the juggernaut that I'm fortunate enough to be in, like all of us. I even though I have one particular loudhailer in terms of the show, but also all of my social media, there's all those other places as where you can be involved as an ambassador, where you can be involved as a local, where you can be involved as a paid up member or a supporter or a contributor. So
yeah,
I just see, you know, in some ways, yes, the world is a smaller place, but I think we need to recognize that it is this massive place.
Yeah.
And we play our little part, but our little part is a big part of lots of little parts coming together.
Yeah. It's interesting that you talk about community. I've been having this conversation with people a lot lately. Perhaps it's because I've been feeling a little bit disconnected from community. And again, when I talk to people about it, they go, oh, well, you know, you just need to do this or you just need to do that. And it's like I'm talking about my immediate community, but also the broader sense of community and what we all bring to it and how we interact with one another and share that knowledge. And I think that's something that you do incredibly well, in terms of you go out into the community and meet people and share their stories. And again, you're right, it could be a big organisation, it could be a handful of people who are incredibly passionate about what they're doing. But spreading that message and weaving, I suppose for me it's almost like the roots of a tree that interact with another tree,
you know,
under the ground. And spreading that network of connections is vital.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you talk about. Like, that analogy is really fitting at the moment because we've become very much focused and fixated on what's above the ground, what's front of house, what's the appearance,
yeah, the
what's
aesthetic
on stage, the aesthetic, as you say. Mm. And the aesthetic is merely the cherry on the top of all the other elements and factors that bring it forth. And if you talk environment, you know, that those few inches of soil, they are what makes the whole world work.
If you don't have good soil.
And that microbial activity, and whether you're a gardener, whether you're a scientist, whether you're someone who doesn't want to even touch food scraps and dirt, and you call it dirt and not soil, you know, it doesn't matter because you're treading on a world within worlds that we're only just learning about. And I just see this opportunity to tell that story through such simple ways. So whether it's the fabric, if you're a fashionista, what are you wearing? What are you putting on your body?
Yeah.
What's gone into those materials? Where do they come from? Whose blood, sweat and tears went into that? And am I endorsing that? You know, would I wear an A-frame in the street and say, I bought this 3 for $20, but they were made by 3 young girls,
exactly,
in a sweatshop in the back blocks of Bangalore or somewhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the same, like we did a story on the weekend about wheat.
Do you
know where the wheat that's in the flour that makes the bread or the pasta or the whatever it is that you're eating, do you actually know where that wheat came from? Do you know its age? How long has it been sitting on the shelf? You know, it denatures from the moment it's milled. And what is the consequence? You know, the consequence of that is a lot of imbalances in people's ability to deal with that wheat and intolerances yes. and so on. And so, you know, we do a story on Gardening Australia and people are like, oh, what are you doing a story on wheat for? And then you say, well, actually, this is a bigger metaphor for everything. And so whether you hook in through food as a foodie or whether you hook in to the planet and the environment and our role in understanding soil as a fashion person, or whether you get into it because you're a forager, or whether you get into it because you're a birdo,
yeah.
or whether you get into it because you're a land carer. Either which way, we rely on that soil. And the stories that we can tie back to the earth, because that's and you know, you might be a sort of wellness practitioner, so grounded, okay? I'll bring you in that way. I say, if you want to be grounded, grounded means the earth is soil, the soil is your core. You know, yeah. if you're all about health and nutrition, if you're a fitness guru, well, your gut, and you might talk about, oh, you got to eat the right food and you got to have fermented food because, well, I go, yeah, okay, well, your gut is a composter, and that's, you need to feed the compost the balance. And you look at all the old cultures, whether it's, you know, all through Central Europe. You look at Germany; they had kraut. You look at in the Asian countries; Korea, they have kimchi and, yeah. and all of this. That's basically a composting accelerator
yeah.
that goes into your gut and says, get in order and get that exhaust system punching out the big ones.
I like how you've expressed that.
and then you're alive, you know. And then that's the output. Like, we have to have output to create an input so that the system keeps rolling. And that to me is this chance. And I can tie it all back to every answer yeah. to any question being compost
yeah.
or soil. We've got to get people in their space. And I think, you know, from my point of view of being in a media role, it's incumbent on me to actually not look at it as, oh, just there's my PowerPoint, bloop, bloop,
sure.
bloop,
the there's this next slide.
It's got to be like, who am I with? Where are they at? And how can you just get one little hook in to then create that connection? It's got to have that signature. And that signature is for those little kindies, or that signature is for that land care group doing sort of swamp care, or this is a group of people doing cocktails and they're cocktail waiters, and how can we get them connected to flavors from native plants, but then go to the next level and say, not only native plants, but indigenous plants to your area. So there's layers, and I kind of think you don't want to dump it on people.
Well,
and leave them to dig
much,
it out,
isn't it? Yeah.
But just start with a little bit, and then go, oh, well, you could use that flavour. But now, you know, what about finding it in your local area, and where would that be? And well, what is your local area?
Yeah.
Like, are you coastal? Are you ridge? Are you woodland? Are you where do you fit into the landscape? And that's endless. That's what keeps me excited, and I think that's how. You know, media and education should be. Like, as you know, I'm involved with the Australian Association of Environmental Educators, and you know, this is an awesome group of people that are, they are punching angles and running lines at all of this education, but they're coming in around the spectrum, and I love that, because the conferences that we have or the events that we do, it's all about inspiring educators. And so that those educators could be school teachers, they could be preschool teachers, they could be local council officers or sustainability people, sure. they could be state government, federal, private business, you know, all that sort of stuff. But again, it's how do you tell a story?
Yeah.
And probably that, as you know, I mean, Australian Geographic, I mean, you've got all this information. You got all these absolute freaks out there finding out information about our world that is enough to make you lose like a week of heartbeats when you hear these things and the connections.
Yes.
But then you go, well, okay, how are we going to package that?
Yes. How do we make it accessible for people so they will really connect and make it part of their world?
Not overload them. Not guilt them.
Yes.
Not shame them. Awe them. You know, we got to awe them. And
make them feel good about making a change, you know, because if you guilt someone, they're going, it's too hard. I'm stepping back. I know. But feel good about this. This is empower people to make, you know, a small change to start with.
You know, Australian Geographic as a, I mean, this is not the kind of word that I want to use, but it's kind of word, but I'll use it anyway. Like as a brand, I mean, it is a trusted information space. People go, I can trust that. That's truth in a world of fake. We have to stand up for those sources and just mark the line. Don't get in a rumble because that's what that whole thing's about. Create a rumble, deflect, create conflict, and then all of a sudden you're off the road.
It's discounted, and
the narrative continues without you.
Yeah. I suppose this is a perfect segue to your work with Junior Landcare, which you're involved with now. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. Look, Landcare, I mean, take it back to the beginning when Bob Hawke announced in 1990 that this was going to be the decade of Landcare. And that was what he was hoping out of that upwelling of activism that was going on. And, you know, it all works in those ebbs and flows. We have these periods and we're in an up moment at the moment. And
with everything that's been going on.
For every bit of up, there's still the other side chipping away at the base.
Yep.
But, you know, that was the, you know, the 90s were, it's when things get difficult. I mean, things were tight, interest rates were high, there was, the community was suffering, you know, there was, and those things come out of that. You got to have adversity, you got to have extremes. You know, if it's beautiful one day, perfect the next, I mean, it's kind of like a bit vanilla. Whereas there were difficult times, people, I mean, can you imagine the 20% interest rates?
Yeah.
Now, I'm just saying that in terms of like that has an impact on everyone, like
everyone and everything.
Whether you're into business or not, like you can't have community with a 20% interest rate and not expect that there's hardships.
Yep.
And so those hardships, you know, they're what create that.
It's almost like create the impetus to drive you forward.
To say, where's an option? Where's an alternative? What can we do? And you know, there we were, decade of land care, let's care for country, and away it went. And there we were 30 years last year, 30 years of land care. Mm. Bob would have been ecstatic to have seen that milestone reached.
Sure.
But like anything, the chance to be involved with Junior Landcare, there's always those edges and those opportunities. Like when there was, you know, Intrepid Landcare is like young people, like more young people from sort of 18, 20 onwards, and a way of getting them in. But Junior Landcare is a way of saying to our youth, our kids, you can't be involved, because the big one for me, the big driver for me is if we want children to care for the environment, they've got to love it.
Mm.
But what we need and what I see Junior Landcare as being is this real hands-on opportunity to get our youth to fall in love with the planet and fall in love with, you know, everything that your scientists and researchers go out and explore and portray.
And find wonder in, you know, and new things about every single day.
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day. Like, and be totally overwhelmed by the fact that you see a cuckoo bee, but you can't buy one.
Yeah.
You can't say, I want it now. You can't say, oh, the powerful owl, come and live in our tree.
Yeah.
They're those real hooks that can only come from the heart.
So the idea behind it is they'll go out into their backyard or their park. Local park or area like that, take photos, come back and tell us what they've seen. Is that?
And that's just one project.
Yeah.
Like that's, I suppose that's just the project that's as simple as go outside and start a log. Log it by camera, log it by day, log it by weather. Yeah. Start to actually feel what the world is doing around you.
Interact with that
yeah.
world.
Yeah. Step out of the air conditioned house.
Step off your device.
Check the temperature. I'm really conscious that stepping off the device is not an invitation to a generation that, on the other hand, we're saying this is part of your world.
Mm.
So my approach with that is to go outside and to use that device to record yeah. and use it to collate and formulate and propagate all sorts of valuable information. And it's very easy to talk about being geek, but information is power.
Mm.
And when you have that information, you can then add to it. And when you add to it, it gets depth and it becomes, you know, more or less like an iceberg. And as you learn these basic operating principles of the planet, you'll almost be able to pick visually, acoustically, aromatically, sensually, you'll be able to then pick what's going on
mm.
because that cue will tell you that that's this bird, and that smell will tell you that there's a wild native beehive here somewhere, and that texture will say, oh, that's that leaf is this plant, and that is connected to this animal, which is connected to roughly this time of year. But you note that down, and then you look the next year, you can start to see fluctuations. So rather than climate change be this polarizing camp, like the moment I mention that, people
oh, yes.
are going to cringe. You see the hair go up because they go, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
So I'm very selective about the language that I use. And so when we can illustrate to children that information is language and language is effort and effort is vocabulary and vocabulary is communication, and then when you connect with the natural world, really what Junior Landcare is about, and this is the reason that motivates me, is that we're basically introducing the children to the language of nature.
Mm.
And that's a language that they'll be able to talk forever. And that's a language that will give them a visa to go into birding. It'll give them a visa to go into, water watch and understanding streams and what's in the stream and how can we check water quality if stream watch and the stream runs to the ocean, well, then I can hook in take three for the sea, because while I'm doing that, there's three pieces of rubbish there. I'll pick that up so that that doesn't become a death piece for a turtle that sees it as some food.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, everything I was talking about,
it's
connecting
yeah.
these groups, well, you don't have to say, oh, you have to do that. It can come up once they get down there. And I think the language that we use to engage them is also the language that will carry them along. There's this wonderful group called Tangaroa Blue, and they go out on these big ocean cleanups. And the interesting thing about that is they collect the data off the waste so they can determine where it's coming from.
Mm.
And they've been collecting waste in far north Queensland that's come up the coast from as far south as Wollongong, or that's come in from Vietnam and from Asia.
Through the currents.
And they can follow this waste and understand. And that's when it goes back to what I was saying about keeping a diary, because that diary gives you information, and that information enables you to have the power to use it to leverage the next action you want to take.
We'll pick up the conversation with Costa after this short break. We have a special offer for all our listeners. Subscribe to our AG magazine for 6 months for just $30 and save 33% on the newsstand price. That's three issues of our award-winning magazine delivered to your home for just $30. Plus, you'll also receive exclusive benefits, including 10% off all products purchased in our e-store. Go to australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia for our special offer. That's australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia. We're back with our conversation with Costa Georgiadis. It's amazing talking to you. I'd have to ask, what were you like as a kid? Were you this passionate when you were a kid? And where does this passion for the natural world come from?
Oh, that's a good question. As a kid, I suppose I loved being outside. Yep. I loved, you know, we had a pretty good rain as kids. Like my mum and they used to let us go off. We used to ride the suburbs. And as long as we were back before the streetlights came on.
So you grew up in Sydney, didn't you?
Yeah. So we used to, you know, we had our boundaries. We'd push the boundaries, but that was all right. We'd ride beyond the zone. It's amazing how far you can go on an old dragster and, you know.
Not for little, sure.
Little racing bike. You can get well and truly out of the zone. But so, you know, I really enjoyed that. I suppose I was given that inoculation by just all of my great aunts and uncles and grandparents in terms of growing and gardening, and my grandfather being a market gardener. Like there was no escape from the importance of food.
Okay, so you had your hands firmly planted in the soil right back then.
Yeah. And I mean, I didn't, like if you were to have asked me at high school, you know, is this where I was going? No, I didn't know. I just enjoyed it. I suppose as I was someone as a kid that just wanted to taste everything. And I suppose that had its roots in support from my parents who backed me to have a go at stuff. Mm. You know, they didn't just drill me into one thing and say, you have to be this or you have to be that. They never, ever did that. And when I look back, I think, wow, like that was a really beautiful thing.
The gift.
Because they backed me, you know, even when I mightn't have been that good at something, they still backed me to have a go. And they didn't sort of value judge the outcome. And the more I think about that, the more I realize that they'd just go, yeah, okay, well, you know, off you go.
Give it a whirl.
And go to the next thing. You know, the things that they did push, that I had to learn Greek, which, you know, I can't put I couldn't put all the gold in the world on that in terms of a price, because having learnt Greek as a child meant that language idea that I was talking about, that communication, I was overwhelmed by the power of that realization when I was in Greece as a 14-year-old speaking to cousins that other friends that were there that couldn't speak Greek couldn't communicate with. And that's when I realized there's another whole world. Like, and that ability to speak Greek was like, wow, that's like a gold key. That was just, it was like something out of Indiana Jones. Like you got to this door and everyone else couldn't get in, and I just went bunk and went in there, and then off I went into this world. And then that sparked me to then want to do, and I learned French when I was studying prior to finding landscape architecture, which just was one of those random things that came up that was almost like suddenly someone showed me a drop down menu that said, you know, biology, plants and planting methods, design, planning, engineering, horticulture, you know, all these things. And I was like, oh, that's sort of combined a lot of the things that I love.
Yep.
And that was midway through first year where my parents just said, go to uni and see how you go. But they didn't say, you know, you have to be this, you've got to be do law like your uncle, or you've got to do marketing because you've got this personality. You know, all these things were popping up. So I think that had a big play, because, you know, they made me learn Greek, and that was a non-negotiable, and that was hard, particularly being in primary school and having to go to WOG school and having to manage that with the other kids in the street when you're supposed to go and play five days a week.
A Saturday morning.
It was originally, and then it went to two afternoons a week. And you know, the afternoon landscape is pretty sought after as a child. You know,
yeah.
You get home from school and you just go out and play with your friends. And that's that. So having to walk the gauntlet with the bag with the, and they knew where I was going, and you know, it was, but that's youth. And so, but they were harsh on that. Well, not harsh. They were like, no, there's no negotiation.
Yeah.
Other things, there might be negotiation. And then they said I had to go on this trip to Greece, which I went on.
This is when you were 14, 15?
When I was 14, yeah, which my sisters went on as well. And that showed me the world. Mm-hmm. And I suppose, you know, from a parent point of view, I mean, they gave me support. They gave me some incredible keys. And then they showed me where to go and put that first key, and then that was
guidance,
it.
Yeah.
That was it. And then I said, all right, when I came back, and that was at 14, 15, I said, right, I'm going to finish school, I'm going to get my study done, get qualified, and then I'm going to go and see the world. And that's what I did. And then I lived over in Europe. I lived in Austria, I lived in Prague, I spent time in Greece. I was there for a large part of the 90s and just had, you know, the kind of experience that I suppose just put more and more layers onto what was a foundation that my parents set up. So,
yeah. So while you were living overseas, were you landscape? Were you doing that work?
Yeah. When I set off, I had 12 months on the road with two of my best friends, and we travelled. We met in Greece, and then we went up through Greece into former Yugoslavia, into Hungary, Czechoslovakia, and then we went all through Austria, Switzerland, Holland, East Germany, sort of Germany, back down into Czech. I then went and looked for some work, found work in Austria for a landscape company, and was building natural swimming ponds, rooftop gardens, and doing community composting back then.
I was going to say, that sounds well ahead of,
yeah,
the
20
time.
Years.
Yeah.
It was a long time.
In Australia. Yeah.
It was amazing. They were like really carving it ahead of the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, to be involved with it and to then see it slowly unfolding. You know, there's been times where you're like, oh, you just sort of think, oh, you know, come on, it's
yeah,
been,
just hurry it
it's
up
been
a
30
bit.
Years, 25 years, but like everything, it's got to fit its time, and those foundations have to be laid, and when they're laid, things will go through. And I believe that something such as environmental education or caring for country and caring for the planet, we have so many markers in this country. We've got an entire cultural history that knows this, that has that data,
yes.
that has that diary, that journal that I talk about
for
with
sure.
children, like the Indigenous history, that journal is beyond compare, beyond encyclopedia. This is like that's terabyte upon terabyte of information that's come through observation, and that's probably the tool that I want to really share with the students in what they do is observe.
Mm.
And then as you observe, understand those connections, and as you make those connections, you'll bring together the language that actually binds it all. And then when you have that, you can then explain it. But you're not going to be explaining it purely with words. You're going to be explaining it with
heart.
I was
going to say it becomes intuitive, I think, when you put all of those things
and it
together.
Comes out of your eyes.
Yeah.
You know, then when you're talking, it's like not, oh, I'm reading something off the top. It's like it's bulging out of your heart and bulging your eyeballs, bulging in your eyes, in your eye sockets. And it's that kind of tamed mongrel that can just bubble up. It's what we want. We want them to understand not just wild nature. We need to rewild the world around us, and that's an opportunity to see the bush as not the bush. You know, the bush is like saying dirt. You know, the bush is this incredible interrelated system that has layer upon layer, and as you pull the next card and the next card and the next card, all of a sudden you've got a jigsaw that you see way beyond whatever you first set out. And then if you want to go deeper, and it's kind of this, that's where I see all these chances, because where do you start? You know, you can't do it all. And I mean, and I'm still faffing around the edges as well. You know, like the more I go out, the more time I spend in landscapes, the more I realize that I know very little. And that's what makes my eyes bulge even more, because I've got plenty to learn about those interactions.
It's interesting. I was out in the bush, out walking on the weekend, and I have this habit of hugging trees. It's a thing I do. I've done it since I was a little kid, and I make my children do it. I don't make them. I encourage them to do it. And there's this connection. There's this connection to nature that when you talk about, you feel it in your heart. You really feel it. It fills you up. And I don't think we talk about doing extra work into it, but our microbiome and everything that we are made of is connected. We're all interconnected, not just as humans, but as with the planet. And I just hope that people get the opportunity to get out and feel that. I think there's so much disconnect for a lot of people. They're either afraid to go out or they don't know how to do it. And once they're out there, they're worried about what's going to happen to them while they're out there. And I think it closes them off to these opportunities to just bathe in it, I suppose.
Yeah, and you know, the Japanese have a term called forest bathing. Mm. And that's become so refined. Like, people have to go and forest bathe.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, you actually need to allot some time. And as far-fetched and as wild as that sounds, like, if you have to do that initially, well, do it. Yeah. You know, just say, okay, that weekend for this season, we're going to go and do a bushwalk.
Yeah.
And then it might be one in 3 months. And then you go, well, let's maybe do one every 6 weeks, and then maybe once a month. And then then the brakes are off.
I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. It's been so lovely talking to you. This stuff fills me up, so it's lovely to talk to someone who feels the same way about it. My heart pumps and my eyes bulge as well. So thank you for coming in today and talking to us, Costa, and I'm hoping that sometime in the future you'll come back and we'll have another chat.
Love to.
Yay. Thank you. All right. Cheers.
Thanks.
That's it for today's episode of Talking Australia with Costa Georgiadis. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to reach out. Write us an email, podcast@australiangeographic.com, or find us on Instagram @AustralianGeographic. And if you go to australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia, you'll find a special subscription offer. So don't wait. Go to australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from. Thanks for listening. And hear you next time.